Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. One of the things that we have always emphasized on this show is bringing forth history, making sure that we serve the role as documentarians, so to speak. And that's important. It's important because in many of our communities, our history is often marginalized, it's dismissed. Sometimes it's ridiculed, especially if it contradicts the mainstream. And I'll give you an example. You know, once upon a time, there were many who would hear the stories of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, who were held up to high esteem. And some of us had the wherewithal to point out that they were slave owners and rapists and racist. And therefore, we didn't hold them to high esteem. That would be dismissed. That would be seen as tomfoolery. I remember mentioning that on CNN one time, and that was the last time I was there. So that just kind of underscores the importance of making sure that our history is often put forth. And I have two gentlemen here who will help us shed some light on history that I think has been kind of overlooked. And we're talking about the Historic African American Association. This was a student organization back in the 60s that really was a breeding ground for a lot of radical ideas. It was the place that Huey Newton and Bobby Seale really got their teeth initially cut into politics. And it was headed by a gentleman by the name of Donald Warden. He later changed his name. And we want to go back into time and look at that history. Some of it was captured in Ricky Vincent's book about the history of the Black Panthers called Party Music. But I have two gentlemen here, Lloyd Cherry and Melvin Phillips, who are part of that organization. And you all have been on a mission, you and a number of other folks, in terms of capturing the history of Oakland, you know, and making sure that younger generations, myself and others, have a blueprint of what you all had laid down. And it's a glorious history that oftentimes is not showcased and highlighted. So, Melvin, first of all, welcome to the show, and I'll let you bring in Lloyd. But we were talking at an African history celebration the other day, and that's when this conversation ensued. So let's start. Let's get a little bit of your background.
Yes. Okay. I grew up in Oakland. I grew up in Oakland and born and raised here. And I have a background in sociology. That's what I went to school for. And for some reason, it seemed like I was always gravitated towards learning about groups and culture and history. And so throughout pretty much my entire life, I have been surrounded by people such as Brother Lloyd Cherry, and I have older brothers that's older than I am, 20 years actually older than I am, around the history of African-American history, of our culture and our history. And through that and being born and raised here in Oakland, I have been able to be aware and seeing the changes that has taken place throughout our history right here in Oakland, California. And so I'm the 70 generation. I grew up and I went to Castlemount High School here in Oakland. And so I was able to get a deeper insight into our history through the African American Association and through my brothers and people like Lloyd Cherry. I had a chance to go to meetings. And so that's just somewhat of an overview of my background, and I can share more later.
Let me ask you this before I bring in Lloyd. What do you say would be the biggest changes in Oakland, if there were two or three, that, you know, from what you just fondly remember and hold on to where we're at now?
The biggest changes I would say has been the makeup of the change of the African American population. I had moved out of Oakland about for 10 years. And then when I came back to Oakland, it was somewhat like a culture shock, to say the least. I live in West Oakland, and the changes that I saw was the makeup of the community. It was more other nationalities that were here, and you had saw a lot of new, I call it the new white generation, and you would see them, you know, walking their bikes, walking or on their bikes at night, or you see them on their skateboards at night, or walking through the community at night and having parties at night. And these are that was the biggest thing. And the biggest change I saw was that I would see them partying, you know, on the weekend. And that's what we used to do back in the day, back in the 70s. You know, we used to party, we used to have house parties, you know.
Right.
And so that was the biggest change that I saw. So it was somewhat of a culture shock to me.
You know, many people forget that West Oakland was considered, you know, a Harlem type of entity. You know, the Fillmore, they called it Harlem of the West, but also West Oakland kind of had that name as well.
Yes. That was the thing that the stories that were shared with me through my older brothers that were 20 years older than I was. The stories of you had 7th Street and you had Slim Jenkins nightclub. You have Esther Orber Room. And then you had all the entertainers, the black entertainers who came up during the 50s, from Lou Rawls to you name it, Otis Redding, who came through West Oakland and performed there in West Oakland. Then you had them also perform on San Pablo, which was called, the name of the hotel was called, I can't recall it by name, but there was this famous hotel on San Pablo. So all the major artists, whenever they came out here, they all came through those different venues, whether it was through 7th Street or on San Pablo Avenue.
I remember Michael Jackson's father, Joe Jackson, spent a bit of time in West Oakland. A lot of people don't talk about that, but always it just kind of underscored that was a hub, as you said, that people would come and really soak up a lot of culture and game, so to speak.
Oh, no doubt about it. They even say Tupac Shakur, when he came to Oakland, he said, you want to learn about game and in terms of dealing in the entertainment industry? He said he learned it from Oakland. So, yes, indeed.
Lloyd, how you doing?
And I'm doing good.
Good. I saw you featured in a movie, you know, a documentary the other night. Which was put together, I want to say Howard, what's Howard's
Ed
last name?
Howard.
Ed Howard, that's right, Ed Howard. I was going to say Howard, but it's Ed Howard, which I think is an important document because he's talking about West Oakland and he's interviewing a lot of people, including yourself, and a lot of people were speaking, and it is just a rich history. But building off of what Melvin was talking about, what do you remember and you know, what are some of the highlights that you recall? And first of all, what's your background?
Well, I'm a native Oaklander. I was born and reared in Oakland. I went to schools in Oakland. I was reared in West Oakland on the west side, and I lived there till I was 15 years old. And in the West Oakland situation. And at that time, it was just predominantly black. It was just, and I lived right across the street from McClamons High School. I grew up right across the street from McClamons High School. So until I was 15 years old, then they had urban renewal in the 50s, and our house and that block was torn down, and my family and I moved to North Oakland.
Urban renewal was the fancy word for gentrification. They didn't use that word back then, but it was called urban renewal. But it seems like you heard that word pop up all over, whether it's from the Bronx where I'm from or San Francisco and the Fillmore District and of course, West Oakland and Chicago. And they all have the same scenario. Freeways are made in an attempt to urban renewal the place, and it breaks up communities.
Yes. And so we moved to North Oakland, and I went to, in 1957, same year they integrated a school in Central High in Little Rock, and I integrated to college preparatory at Technical High School, at a school that was predominantly white, and took college preparatory. And so I was in the classroom with a lot of white students, and I had come out of a predominantly black situation and from West Oakland. So I went through a great challenge in my life because the church that I attended, my family was black, the church that I attended was black, and the life that I saw black men and the culture that I came out of, where black men and women were in leadership, and it was solid. Then I went to my experience with the white culture. They had no knowledge, no understanding of me and my and black culture, black life. So I was going through a lot of at Technical High School. It got me ready to deal with the subtle racism. I didn't know how to articulate and verbalize what I was experiencing at Technical High School, but I was ripe for the Afro-American Association, or these black scholars, activists, that Don Warden and others that came from primarily from the East Coast, and it was started from a book club off of Cal Berkeley. The Afro-American Association was started by Don Warden and others that had a book club. And they said, well, we're going to take it to the street. We're going to take the Afro-American Association to the street. And that's in 1961 is when I first heard Don Warden speaking to a group of students at Old Merritt campus on Grove Street.
Yeah. Now, Grove Street used to be Martin Luther King, right? I remember when there was a fight in the 80s to change the name to that, you know. But where was the Merritt College campus exactly? Was it in West Oakland?
It was on 57th and Martin Luther King, 57th between 57th, 58th, and Martin Luther King.
So that was North Oakland then?
In North Oakland. That was considered North Oakland. And these were North Oakland and West Oakland. When I went to Tech High School, if you went to Tech, it was an attitude that people had about West Oakland.
Oakland Tech, you're talking about, right?
Oakland Technical High School. So West Oakland was considered to be low life, or a lot of people look down, you know, just like some people, like a lot of the young people would say, if you lived in the hills, you are superior, you better than those in the flatland. Mm. Then it was, if you were in North Oakland or Berkeley, you were better, you were higher class than those that lived in West Oakland. It was all these attitudes. I'm just talking about the attitudes. And see, in the association, when I got into the Afro-American Association, it dealt with attitudes that we had about ourselves and other people.
Class attitudes.
Class attitudes. So And the Afro-American Association was intensely intellectual, because the people that were giving the lectures at the association were Phi Beta Kappas. They were all straight A students, and they were intense in academic intellectual information.
Let me ask you this. We're talking about 1961, 1962.
Yeah.
You know, very different Oakland. West Oakland is the hub. You know, we talk about deep East Oakland and all throughout the East as being the hub, but it was West Oakland where it jumped off. When you talk about Don Warden, you know, in this association coming off the Cal campus and they're taking it into the streets, into the community, what sort of conversations were you having? I know you said that it was about trying to, you know, I'll use the word decolonize, or, you know, get people out of the mindset of who's better and who isn't based on class. But what were some of the concepts that you all were talking about? And I think that's important, because I think some of the things we may take for granted, you know. I mean, you're talking about a time when segregation maybe didn't exist in Oakland per se, but segregation was the law of the land in a lot of places around the country.
Well, the association talked about the de facto segregation of Oakland. It called it de facto segregated. Oakland was segregated de facto. So they had segregation in the South, but Oakland was very much segregated, and the intellectuals addressed that, how the subtle segregation that you had out in Oakland, you know. And so it was covering so much information. Don Warden and others who were intensely intellectual. So when they spoke, you just listen, and you got so much information, because they just poured out information about what was going on socially and what was going on. In fact, we developed in the association, there were mnemonic devices to help you remember so much. It was so much information coming at you that we had mnemonic devices that we had to talk about and to remember, to kind of help us put this into perspective.
What's a mnemonic device? What does that mean?
It's a way of categorizing information. By the content or the subject, we analyze religious institution, and we analyze intellectual. We analyze intellectual activity and social issues. And economic and political, we analyze that, we critique that, we use scholars, so you couldn't talk on those subjects unless you would quote a scholar who had information and did research in these areas. So it's best. So who became a part of the association were people who never read a book, who wouldn't read, including Huey P. Newton, because I knew Huey P. Newton from high school, and Huey P. Newton and my older brother, you couldn't get them to read. They weren't into anything to deal with the intellectual activity. They were more into the street, you know. So. But the Afro-American Association, through Don Warden and others that were that was promoting intellectual information, it got them involved in that. Mm-hmm. Got Huey Newton and my brother started reading more, quoting these scholars. And so, and we were, because Don Warden was head of the debating team at Howard University before he came to Boat Hall, Don Warden was a superior debater. In fact, that movie that came out some years ago about the debater, actually, a movie could be made about Don Warden and his debating skills, because when I got involved in the Afro-American Association and went on to San Jose State, I used to bring Don Warden to San Jose State, and he debated against all the professors at San Jose State.
Oh, wow. And this is when he was still a law school student?
No, after he was a lawyer.
Okay.
He was international. Don has a law degree in international law. So Don, when I got involved in the Afro-American Association, these were scholars, but they were activists, because every weekend, when I was going to college, we had street rallies, and white police officers were surrounding us, and we were blowing on the street corners in the heart of the hood, on 7th Street, 98th and Eads, and Fillmore District in San Francisco. And Henry Ramsey was a part of that. He was one of the lecturers.
Who's Henry Ramsey, for people who don't know?
He's a judge. He became a judge, mm-hmm. attorney. But it was other lawyers, because, see, there were a number of lawyers, young lawyers, black lawyers. Yeah, I think these were black lawyers. They were in the Afro-American Association, including
Henderson, Judge Henderson over in San Francisco.
Oh, that's right.
Judge Henderson. Yeah.
Who's overseeing the consent decree for the police now, right?
Yes.
And Ron Dellums was a part of that. Ron Dellums, the congressman, Ron Dellums, and Huey Newton and Bobby Seale, they were just quiet, where all these other ones were giving the lectures.
You know, it's interesting, if you're just tuning in, we're getting a little bit of history this afternoon here on Hard Knock Radio, talking with, that's the voice of Lloyd Cherry, talking about the African-American Association that existed in the 60s, a precursor to a lot of activism that jumped off here, including the Black Panthers. Also, Melvin Phillips is here as well, sharing with us that information. What I find interesting is, hearing that Warden came out of Balt Law School, and he brings that to the table because, not that it's anywhere near or had the impact of the African-American Association in the 60s, but a little bit of history, and I'm going to have to get these brothers on, was in the late 80s, early 90s. Mm. There was a group of black law students that came together out of Balt, and they called themselves GRIP, Group for Rap Industry Protection. Mm. And they formed a clique and brought their intellectualism and law understanding to help overturn the ban on rap music that came out of Berkeley and then spread into Oakland. So I guess Balt is a little hotbed, but I think the more important thing is that you had students, whether it was in the late 90s or in the 60s, which you're talking about, where they clearly understood the importance of making sure you bring the activism from the campus into the community and you rock and roll with them.
Yeah. And because Don Warden was a Pentecostal preacher when he was a teenager, book club felt that he had the gift to reach the streets. He had the they had other intellectuals that were part of the book club, but Don had the ability to talk to the rank and file, the everyday person on the street, with all that information that he had. He could break it down and make it plain. And so the association had got people from Oakland that used to be gangbangers. Started reading books and became very involved in the association's program, which was to empower black people politically, economically, socially, and intellectually. Mm-hmm. So the association's thrust was to empower black people, people of African descent, and to have a positive self-identity and move forward based on your positive way of thinking about yourself and your people and move forward. And they were the association was removing the negative attitudes that we had towards ourselves and giving the people that heard the association program confidence in their ability to affect change mm-hmm. in their circumstances that we found ourselves in. We always knew that the West Oakland situation that blacks were in, that we were in a situation that the white community in Oakland had us the word I want to use is controlled, mm-hmm. controlled, and relegated to West Oakland. Blacks knew that, so the Afro American Association was challenging the whole notion of us being controlled by the white attitudes, the white. We didn't use words like racism. We said the white supremacy, and we pointed to the fact that because black folks had an identity and a culture before coming to this United States, what is called United States of America. And so the Afro-American Association put a lot of emphasis on what we brought to America that whites used to empower themselves mm-hmm. and stole it from us. So association made you feel proud about your people, and proud of the legacy that you had as a black person, and it made me, I was gonna be an electrician, of which I became an electrician. I became a union electrician, IBW Local 595, but I had a straight up attitude towards the union. Union, because in the 50s, if you were black, you couldn't get in the electrical union.
Right.
And that was just, but I had an attitude I was going to break the doors down. So I was in the association with an attitude. And I had a straight up attitude.
Right. Long before NWA, you had that attitude.
I had a straight up attitude, and so the association. A lot of the people in the association, you know, gang bangers, everything was in the association,
right.
And because it was making you feel proud of who you are. You are part of of a people that did great and outstanding things for all humanity.
Right. Let me just hold that point right there. We're talking with Lloyd Cherry. I'm talking about giving some history of West Oakland, the African American Association, if you're just tuning in. I want to bring you back into this, and we're talking with that was Lloyd Cherry, but we also have Melvin Phillips here. He's talking about the 60s, but you come into this in the 70s. This is when you get it?
That's correct.
Let's get a little bit of your perspective going into the 70s, because by then the Black Panthers are around. Mm-hmm. Activism, militancy is there. Mm-hmm. Terms like Black Power is in the mix.
Yes.
But you still have this association that's going strong.
Yes.
So how did that association kind of adapt to what is now becoming a, you know, at least if you're looking at history, a very prominent train of thought, you know, having militant attitude, you know, looking at the civil rights movement and with a different sort of eye, like maybe it's a little too soft, we need to go harder. So you're at this point.
Well, yeah, I came along at a time where I was fortunate enough to hear espouses, Brother Cherry was saying, people like Don Wharton do debates. Actually, he had a radio program on KDIA. It came on every weekend on Saturday. And so I would literally sit by the radio and wait for the program to come on, because he was such a good debater about Black history, espousing Black identity. That was during the time I can remember even. And when as early as the age of, I was like 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, him coming on the air and espousing, said loud, "I'm Black and I'm proud." And also he had a chance to work with Don Wharton, with James Brown, who came out with that song, "Said Loud and I'm Black and I'm Proud," when Black people weren't even calling themselves Black. And
now,
so
let me
remember that.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you this, because, you know, we know that a lot of people step to James, you know, most famously is H-Rap Brown.
Yes.
Now we know him as Amin. Oh, gosh, why am I going to mess up his name? I'm going to get his name in a second. No. I was talking about H-Rap Brown. Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, because he was a SNCC, right?
Yeah.
But Don also got a James as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. It was big time. In fact, they had the Black and Brown stamp they came up with. And my brother still has copies of those stamps. They were like blue chip stamps, and you can cash them as for coupons to get different gifts and stuff through the book club that they had developed through the African American Association. And so I had an opportunity at a very early age to be exposed to going to the meetings that my brother made sure that I went to those meetings and learned about the history of our history of Black people. And so it was from that, and then from listening to the radio program, as Brother Cherry was saying, on the air, and Don could relate and to almost anybody out there in the community. And he was also instrumental in with the Black filmmakers during the 70s. With all the Black movies, like when they came out with The Mac, when they came out with all those movies, they had the Black, they came out with the, actually Oakland was the Black first, Black filmmakers was in Oakland. They had the first Black filmmakers Hall of Fame was in Oakland, and it was by my older brother Ernest Howard, and was the first chairperson in 1972, I believe it was. And so they were on point when it came to anything, African American Association, anything that had to do with Black history. I saw them as the taking it to a more of a public forum, like the rappers did when they came out in the 90s. They were more vocal. Then came along after Don Wharton was the most vocal one, taking the lead in the early 60s. Then came Huey Newton. Then came Bobby Seals. And then I saw that in the 70s. And then I was considering myself like somewhat of an activist too, because I was at that time in the 70s after I graduated out of high school. I ended up graduating from Castlemount High and ended up going on to work for UPS as a loader. And then I became an activist for more black drivers because there was very few black drivers. So I was affected by the influence of those who came before me, to have that activist spirit and be able to not be afraid to know who you are, to be proud of your identity of who you was as a black person, mm-hmm. and to be able to speak up for yourself. And so I had no problem speaking up, whether no matter what form it was in. And right. so I got that from them, from that generation.
Let me ask you this. You know, we talk about this African-American Association starting out of the book club.
Yes.
What were some of the books? You know, what were some of the books that came to mind that you all read or uh-huh. talked about?
Uh-huh. Franz Fanon.
Wretched of the Earth.
Yeah, The Wretched of the Earth. Yeah, that was one of the books that was a must read if you were part of the African-American Association. And I can recall even during the holidays, Christmas, my brother would give us African American history books about Africa, whether it was about the Malay Kingdom and the other kingdoms that were in Africa. So these were books that they were reading in the association.
Right.
And also, I forgot to mention, we had to go. They had us going to the Golden Gate Library to learn how to read about our history. So we had to go to the Golden Gate when I was like 13 and 14. When my friends wasn't going, my older brother was telling my mother, well, make sure that I go there. And so me and my brother, we had to go to the Golden Gate Library in North Oakland at that time when we were like 13, 14, and 15 years old.
Yeah.
And so, yes.
Let me ask you also this. With the women, you know, who were some of the women, their sisters, were they involved
and what was
their contribution to this?
Yeah, Mary Smith, she was a Phi Beta Kappa. She was one of the speakers, too, Mary Smith. And we had, you know, when I look back on it, men, young boys, and whether you were a gangbanger or whatever you start to develop their intellect. So, in fact, the first Huey P. Newton got in the. We used to hang out at Quarter Pound in Emeryville, right after high school. And Huey Newton got in the back of the car, and he started talking to me about a book that he read called Myth of the Negro Past by Melvin J. Hershkovich. And I couldn't believe this is Huey P. Newton talking about a book. And he talked about, I'm going to be a black psychiatrist and black historian. Huey P. Newton. I can't believe it, because I was always the one. I was studious through high school, and I ran track. I ran track, and I guess the younger generation would say that I was a nerd and a jock. So, but anyway, but Huey was not. He was not that in high school. So then when I heard Don speak. Donald Ward to speak first time in 61 at the City College. What convinced me that Don had some credibility to what he was saying, because somebody in the crowd, it was a mixed crowd of whites and blacks, and he asked Don, by what authority do you speak? And Don said, by the authority and blood of my ancestors. And when he said that, I said, he had something to say.
He had attitude.
Yeah, he had attitude. So and then I started going to, association used to have Afro-American Association School met on Monday. Then on Friday nights, that's when the leadership met. If you wanted to be a part of the leadership and be active in the association, you would go to the forum meeting on Friday nights. Mm-hmm. And that's where Bobby Seale and Huey Newton and a guy named Kenny Freeman, changed his name to Mamadou, and Don Warden would just talk nonstop 4 or 5 hours. Nonstop, just information. It wasn't a conversation. You just listen, talking about global and world issues, mm-hmm. and then we would come up with strategy of when we were going to do a rally on that next morning. Right. On Saturday, we would have a rally.
Right. Now, you had mentioned Mary Smith. I want to come back to that because, you know, a lot of sisters listen. They're going, well, what about us? So was she, you know, she was a part of this thing. She was one of the speakers. And did she help organize as well?
Well, she, when we came to Street Corner, see, at that time, it was like, I kind of put it. Black men, we were at a war with racism, with white supremacy, and it was fight between the black men, and it's just we were fighting each other, but when the association starts saying your real enemy.
So they got you to redirect your anger.
Redirect. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
All that frustration and anger that you had built up, the association had you start projecting that towards the system that had put you in that condition, right. and made you aware that it was a system that made you be in the circumstances that you were in.
Right. Go ahead, Melvin.
Let me say this. I want to get back two things to answer your question. One is about the women, and the other one is about what I saw in the 70s take place with the what you mentioned earlier about the de facto segregation between the blacks and in Oakland, the blacks that were in the North Oakland and the blacks that were in West Oakland and the blacks that had started moving into East Oakland. And the blacks, so in the 70s, there was this big controversy over the Grove Street campus. And which was in North Oakland, Marriott College was in North Oakland. And they had the system, so to speak, the school system decided that because the Black Panther Party had basically taken over the Grove Street campus, and they had where there was the first black curriculum study in the nation in all the colleges and the university. And a lot of people don't know this, but Huey Newton's older brother Melvin Newton, right. was a teacher at the Grove Street campus, and he was the one who shared with his brother Huey about the whole 10-step principle that whole process and concept of dealing with the whole coming up with the
10-point platform.
10-point platform. So that was part of the then development of Black History program there at Grove Creek's campus. That's where it started at. And so there was a shift in the system and in the staff, and they said, well, wait a minute here. These blacks, they're coming too knowledgeable and understanding their history, and they're basically taking over the campus. And so they moved it to the hills up in East Oakland Hills.
Campus Drive and all that.
Campus Drive. And when they did I was graduating from high school. So at that point in history, we had a black history teacher. I get into the women. Her name was, if I remember correctly, Cecilia Harrington. And so she became over the black history program there at Mary College. They changed it from, so that was the change that had taken place. And so they started, but the black history program went on, a curriculum went on there at Merritt, and that's when a lot of blacks who had grew up in Oakland, who had went to the community college like myself, started to learn more about their history. But there was somewhat of a gap because you have those who didn't go. But also, I guess I want to say that that's where you saw the transformation take place. And then you saw more people getting speaking out, being more informed about who they were as black people in our community. So I want to get that in there.
No doubt. You know, we're running out of time
sure.
for this segment, and we want to pick this up and continue this. But I'm going to give people a little bit of this history because we're dedicating ourselves to unearthing and making sure that this is put out there for folks. Don passed earlier this year. Any last comments that we should know, that we should say about him, that you want to put out there? You know, because his passing was kind of briefly mentioned in the papers, and then it moved on. And, you know, and I thought that was kind of strange considering the impact that he had.
I think that Don saw himself as a catalyst for social, economic, and political change when it came to the whole race relation, not only in Oakland, but in United States and in Africa. Don had the whole thing with Africa. This Afro-American Association was what we would call now Afrocentric. So association made you feel good that you were from Africa, and African people were a strong people and made a lot of contributions to the world and to United States and to the world. So association, Don Warden, he was totally absorbed in that, to do just that. That was Don Warden. College changed his name, but that's who, and
when he died, his name was?
Khaled Al-Mansour, Tariq Al-Mansour.
Well, there you have it. Lloyd Cherry, go ahead.
One thing I just want to say is I see the whole African-American Association as an evolution and a revolutionary vision of Don Warden and the African-American Association. And I see it as coming back in full circle, that where we began to recognize and honor those stories and to commemorate those stories and celebrate those stories through having an anniversary of the African-American Association.
When's that anniversary?
We're going to work on when they founded the African-American Association for next year.
Well, there you have it. Melvin Phillips, Lloyd Cherry, thank you so much for joining us on Hard Knock Radio. We're going to take a break, and this is not a end of a conversation. It's the beginning. So you just got a little taste of some of this rich history that, you know, is intentionally obscured for many of us. But we're here to unearth it, and we appreciate these folks coming in and sharing with us. We'll be right back on Hard Knock Radio. Peace.